Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Welcome back to Post Show Recaps coverage of The Crown. My name is Grace. I'm here with my co-host Shannon. Shannon, how you doing?
I am doing great. Less horrible. Sorry, I don't have another word. Nothing horrible. It's a different episode, but like I feel like the words that I would use, the keywords for this episode, are too awkward for me to bring up in the intro. So I'm going back to horrible.
You wore your revenge dress today. That's good.
Yes. I'm wearing a Hamilton t-shirt, but sure, this is the best that I can do from a revenge dress perspective. I hope I say more than Diana does in this podcast and she did in the episode. Not one word spoken from Diana. Payment thing from the actress?
They all have, I think, other stuff to do, Shannon. They're like, finally, Dominic. Yeah, that's true. She is there. I did get some feedback from the great Sam Moore, who said, I'm really loving the season, but Diana's too tall. feedback was.
Well, you know what? Let Diana be as tall. Her height reflects her stature as a cultural icon. That's what it is. It's a metaphor. Yeah, like everything.
What are you gonna do? It's the perfect actress to play Diana. You can't like make her look shorter. You know, it's fine. It's just fine.
Make yourself shorter for this role. Howard, just hunch a bit.
Crouching all the time. I did ask our guest if you could make yourself seem shorter. We are not alone. We are joined today by the wonderful Lindsay Wilson. Lindsay, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's nice not just to be an ornament stuck in a waiting room gathering dust. Mm-hmm. I'm here with actual opinions. Also, real Diana is like 5'10". What is everyone complaining about?
Yeah, I don't know.
But Elizabeth Debicki is much even taller than that.
Everyone, still. Everyone equals Sam Moore.
Yes, Sam.
Get over
my
it.
This is what he said. My one real crown take that is very important. Elizabeth Debicki is too tall and is throwing me off how she towers over literally everyone and everyone is in exclamation.
Metaphor. Metaphor for society. Yeah.
I like that.
Before we get into, I want to hear your takes on The Crown so far, the season five, as well as the four seasons prior. But first, I just want to remind folks, postrecaps.com/The Crown. Please subscribe to the podcast feed, rate and review. All of that is much appreciated. As we're just about halfway through, and we have The Way Ahead for 5 more episodes, Shannon. So, yeah.
Exactly. The Way Forward, I think it was. I know that there was a sticking point. It was a Navy thing or something. But Philip really attached to some things in this episode.
Not a great Philip episode. Well, I mean, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. But Lindsay, we're going to talk about The Way Ahead, but give us your crown takes seasons 1 through 4 and the first 4 episodes of season 5.
Yes. So I think I was kind of late. Yeah, I was definitely late to The Crown, I should say kind of. I came into it, I think, around this time last year, maybe, and knocked them all out very quickly. And also do the same thing that you two do, sit down with my Wikipedia, go through everyone. But I have no problems with watching a whole bunch of them all in a row and doing all of the associated research. And listening to you two back talking about seasons 1 to 4, it was so much fun because I was remembering all those moments that had sort of blended together in watching it so fast, and I was just remembering how good those seasons really were. Really loving this season. I have already watched the whole thing, but I really enjoyed going back to it for this. I think it's so good. I think Elizabeth Debicki.
Yeah.
Vicky. She's so captivating, and so tall. Engaging as Diana. Yeah. I'm loving her. She's so tall. She's so statuesque.
Her charisma is at the height of her own actual height.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, no, I'm loving it so much. I'm really liking everything about it. And everything I know about Princess Diana pretty much is from the You're Wrong About series about Diana. I've listened to that four times. It's so good. And so there's been a lot of like comparing and contrasting with what I've learned with what they're showing in this season.
Fun. Shannon, let's talk about the way ahead. I do think it's very funny that the episode, there's a lot of like Charles being like, the English language is most important, when there's been a whole episode about like him specifically learning Welsh.
But
did you forget about your Welsh tutor? Because Shannon's going to be very mad that you're, disparaging him.
It was the best episode of season 3.
Yeah.
It's not close. Well, maybe. I really love that episode.
So last episode was like Margaret, and then it loops Elizabeth back at the beginning and the end, and she makes the speech, but this one really, this is a big like Charles episode. What'd you think of The Way Ahead, Shannon?
I thought it was a really interesting episode. There was something about it and I couldn't work out what it was, and then last night as I was trying to fall asleep, I was like, you know what? It was the pacing was very interesting to me. It was about the fact that, firstly, as I said, Diana does not say one word, but she's in so many of the scenes. You know, she's reacting to, they tell Elizabeth they're going to separate. She reacts to that announcement. She reacts to the call. She reacts to the documentary. She's in the revenge dress. So she's a big part of the episode, but she doesn't speak at all. And I think that that kind of reaction at large created a really interesting structure for me, where the crescendo came in the documentary, but for me that kind of fell a little flat, because like, oh my God, I know it caused a stir at the time, like he's admitted to committing adultery, but we just saw the leak call. So like, how much of a surprise can that have really been to people? So that's the big crescendo, and we don't get like the classic Crown confrontation scene, which I know they can't use as like this, you know, narrative style in every episode. I myself am partial to a good confrontation scene, but that's not where it goes. Probably get the closest to that with Philip. It's more like these muted reactions, you know, Diana is silent, Andrew kind of silently reacts to like the humiliation that he's had, and then he like silently leaves. Even Elizabeth doesn't confront Charles, like she kind of has these more muted response to this power struggle that's happening. So I think in that it drives the story forward in really interesting ways, and it's very much like we're following this very like actually dramatic story. But I think the fact that they kind of keep it simmering, knowing that things are going to like explode later on, and Diana's very much going to find her voice in story elements, I'm sure, coming up, I think that was like an interesting narrative choice for it.
Yeah, I think the thing for me is like, as this episode comes back and it's really a Charles episode, is I said this about the last episode, that it feels like once when they center the spotlight on somebody, nobody else, everybody else sort of gets like cut a fair bit, like they're not really
side characters
in it. But I do think, like to your point, like Diana is in this episode, but I think that's really intentional for it to not be Charles and Diana's story. It's to let us see Charles' point of view before inevitably, as you're saying, like Diana's going to find her voice, and sort of, I presume Lindsay knows this already, but we'll have a much more Diana-centric episode before the end of the season. What'd you think of this one, Lindsay?
Yeah, I completely agree with everything Shannon just said. I also have the same thing written down of, it's so interesting structurally to get these big chunks of things that are happening to Charles and then just cut to Diana's reaction without her actually getting to have a say in what's going on. You don't get to hear her reaction, you're just seeing it. It's all in how it's being acted on her face and in her body language and all of that. And I think it's so, yeah, it's just so compelling to see it, because it is a way of keeping her in the story, and it forces you to keep thinking like, oh, how is this going to impact Diana? Like it just keeps reminding you of like, this isn't just contained to what Charles and Camilla are experiencing. This is having repercussions, and we're not feeling the full force of those yet. We're just getting little glimpses of them scattered throughout the episode. But I also agree that it kind of takes away some of the heft of it, that you don't actually get that confrontation. It just, you know, we get a little glimpse of her, and it's like, oh, look, she's in her dress. Isn't she pretty? She's upstaged him. So definitely, I think needs that final confrontation.
I don't know. There's a way in which this is a very much like a The Crown episode, in terms of this is a point that one of our listeners, I believe Spencer, wrote in and was talking. I think the discussion you and I were having, Shannon, was like kind of something about Harry and Meghan and Will. And his point was like, well, it's, the show is about like the people who are like the heir to the throne, the crown. And not that it's not about those other people, but I think that what this episode actually, to put Diana sort of in the background, is like the way that the the family is like treats her as well. Mm. That very much like it doesn't really matter what she's doing. Like she's sort of like she is silenced in a way mm-hmm. by like the system. And so to choose to for this to really be like Charles' point of view, what's happening to Charles, him like, you know, complaining at parties and still upset that, you know, of everything that's happening, like his position in the system, in the family. You know, he gets like scolded in front of a bunch of people by his like father, despite being the heir. I actually think that in some ways, I actually kind of like the decision for that to have like it's an interesting editorial choice, basically, mm-hmm. to have Diana be silenced because that is the way that the family treats her.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a choice. Like they're really making a decision by having a character like Diana not say one word. Cause at a certain point she could say something. And I'm like, it was only like three quarters through. I'm like, has Diana actually spoken this episode? And then only going through it again, I needed to make sure she doesn't say a word. Like, I think that everything you've said about it, both of you, makes sense for why they'd make that editorial choice. I also think that it could show kind of being like voiceless in a situation. Again, she won't be forever and she hasn't even been before, but like specifically in like these types of situations where things are being said about her own marriage or she's being like kind of a character in a story that she's not a part of, like when the tapes leak, like it's about her but she's not a part of that conversation. So like by making her voiceless, it might show kind of the lack of control that she's had and even being put in predicaments like this. And I also think it shows her ironically as being kind of ornamental, which is a word mm-hmm. that Charles uses, but even from like the adoring public, it's like, wow, Diana really made her mark. She wore a dress, you know, and parts of that are like, uh-huh. I guess, kind of powerful. But other parts are like, well, you see her as this kind of character in a story who would have a reaction to something. You read into things that she is doing. And it's not even in her having necessarily at least vocal agency. It's how we perceive her to be as this, like, again, like too tall, but statuesque kind of like perfect figure. And even idealistic, like that yeah. can be a negative thing, the way it's like, wow, Diana like really made a statement again by wearing something. That in its own way can be a little bit minimizing, dismissive, and derogatory in that it's not that they're trying to do that, but it's like you're just, again, this ornamental thing. So I think by taking away her voice in that, I'm sure it'll mean it explodes a lot more later on and there is that simmer. But I think just in the context of that, it can show a lack of power and also a lack of just the way that she's regarded in the public by being just more of a figure, an ornamental figure, than someone who would have that voice.
Yeah,
it's interesting too. Like I remember hearing at one point, like prior to her death, there was a bit of commentary of like how rarely people had actually heard her speak in comparison to what an outsized figure she was in terms of the media. And so it's like everybody knows who wow. she is, everybody knows what she looks like, everybody knows exactly. what she represents, but nobody actually knows what her voice sounds like. And so that I think is powerful symbolically too.
I think that there's like, it's like the Diana haircut, the Diana dress, you know, mm-hmm. so much of that is just how we
the beanie
see her,
baby,
how we hear her. The Tamagotchi. So much of that is how she's perceived in that way. So I think it is in this one context, like a commentary of the way she was perceived that way.
I agree. I feel like now that I've watched a bunch of media with her in it, I'm like, you know, when Elizabeth Debicki and Emma Corrin last season are like doing the Diana voice, I'm like, oh, that's the Diana voice. But I didn't really know the Diana voice like growing up. Like she is sort of this, like, I feel like she does have like a way. She's not like Margaret, like was like the Helena Bonham Carter Margaret of like being at the party and being lavish. She's like much more like subdued, like mm-hmm. like head down. Like she gives off being shy while also being a bit like I was gonna say cheeky. I don't know if I'm allowed to say cheeky. when she's like with the lifeguards last season, right? Like she's being yeah. she's like she knows how to entertain, but also it like it whether it, it doesn't always look like it's like a natural thing for her to be doing, although somehow that is very natural. I don't know if that makes sense at all, but she just sort of has this demeanor of like she's not the commanding person. And that's also I think part of like my remembrance of Diana as well in terms of the end of it, is that like she was so like swallowed in media attention as well, that like there's that image of her too, of being like, I think the shy, like not wanting to she's not trying to get attention. I think a lot of the, like she, it's not like she, I don't know, she's not doing these outlandish things to get attention. Certainly she talks about in last season when is it the tour and Elizabeth like condemned, she's like, well yeah, of course it felt good to be like cheered, like mm-hmm. why wouldn't that be, you know, like I don't get it from any of you, I don't get any love from you, so of course I do. So she's like this very interesting figure where it doesn't feel like she's always like being like, look at me, come look at me, Although she is wearing like a revenge dress in this episode to be kind of like, mm-hmm. look at me. I don't know, very complicated.
But she hadn't worn that dress until like push came to shove, basically. Right. I think like Diana as well, like she is a contradiction, and that's because everyone puts onto her what they want to, like as a society, because she's such this like larger than life figure, even if she's not a larger than life character, like she will be, again, like the young kind of like ingenue that, you know, people really put that, then like a maternal stuff that they put onto the way that she was a mother, the way she cared about people. She was also seen as like more modern and progressive. Like, I feel like when you're such a major like person in society, people don't really know you, so they'll just kind of put onto you whatever they want to. And by making her silent in this episode, there probably is stuff that comes out of it, because it's like, Diana really had her say with the dress. Like, when we see kind of the internal stuff, but we also just have to imagine how that felt without hearing it from her. And I think that mm-hmm. probably does address how society was doing that when she was like one of the most famous people in the world, and then the way that people perceived her really led to her death, because there was so much intrigue around like how she would be without us ever really knowing. So yeah, I mean, it must have been an interesting editorial choice if we can talk about it for this length. But I wanted to say as well, like, ironically, lack of voice, but the voice acting in this show is so good. Like, we're hearing from Charles on the phone, I'm like, that could be Josh O'Connor. Like, that's really the through line for me, is like how well they all, even like Elizabeth, like obviously the writing and stuff, but the voice acting is so good. So
I presume,
unfortunately, we didn't get that from Diana.
I do presume that the phone audio is Josh O'Connor. Is that not right? Am I wrong?
Oh, because I'm like, wow, that sounds like Josh O'Connor. Why would it be? We see him talking. Like, we see this version of Charles talking. I think that's just how similar it is. That's what I was, that you even thought it was Josh O'Connor. It shows that exactly what I thought. Wow, that sounds like Josh O'Connor. I don't think it was. I didn't see anything about in like, on Wikipedia about him like reprising the role.
And also, it'd be surprising for them to switch.
Yeah. And he's like, we see like him talking on the phone. So it's not like it was like
years ago. Okay, yeah, fair enough. Let me get we've jumped into this, but let me give a brief recap just as we get started. So we see the Prince Charles and Princess Diana. They formally separate. They let the Queen know that they cannot resolve their differences because they're going to separate. And then a tabloid newspaper publishes transcripts of an intimate telephone conversation between Charles and Camilla 3 years earlier. An informal group of advisors starts meeting regularly to talk about how to improve the monarchy's image. It's basically run by Prince Philip, and really none of the big issues that Charles would want to talk about, like Queen Victoria syndrome, are discussed at all. To improve his image, Charles does appear in a documentary, Charles the Private Man, the Public Role. Diana and Camilla are both faced with increased press attention. Diana wears the revenge dress, and Princess Anne goes for lunch with Charles. She does not eat I guess she does eventually eat the asparagus. So she's grown in the garden, yeah. She comes back saying that actually the scandal has not broke him. Charles is stronger than ever, and he's setting up an advisors to work on a progressive agenda to counter the Way Ahead group. This is the Prince's Trust, which helps disadvantaged youth across the country. That's rad. I think hilarious that they're like, yeah, he's like setting up his own shop, and then we all know that he just has to wait 30 more years.
Exactly right.
This poor man. We are notorious. We are slight Charles apologists on this podcast. Lindsay, where do you sit?
If you want to bow out. Yeah.
I have the exact same note written of like, it's wild to think that like throughout this whole season already, he's like, I mean, any minute now, I'm probably going to take over. And it's like another 30 years.
Yeah.
It's crazy when he's in his 20s, I feel like through season 3, when they're like, when you're sovereign. And at the time I was watching that, he still wasn't even sovereign then. And it really mm-hmm. changed my perspective on things. But I'm like, why does Charles think that he would be king now? Like, for sure, it makes sense. Like, decades later, like the Queen does, because like she stays on the throne like for historic periods, and she does live like to a very, very late age. But at this point, like, he's only in his 40s and the Queen is in her 60s. Like, mm-hmm. she probably wouldn't have died by now. Like, why is he like, why aren't I king yet? Like, it would be highly likely you wouldn't be king yet. I guess they set it up the whole time like you're gonna be king. Like, they might have been scarred from the fact that Elizabeth had the opposite, where she like had the shock where they thought they were gonna have decades with her not being a sovereign, and then she had to do it in her 20s. But it feels like they kind of overcompensated to the point where he's like, I should really be the king now. It's like, but most people would have lived to their mid-60s, and that the Queen is only in her mid-60s. Like, why would you think that she would be dead or step down at this point?
She could die any day. That's yeah, to be ready.
It feels like he wants it. Yeah. Why would you die?
He definitely wants her to abdicate. So, yeah. You know, yeah. I kept joking that like, wow, Dominic West really took some time off and has not been in the show. So he does get like this full, this full episode, including coming back to play, this like wild phone conversation with Camilla, that I don't think I ever need to hear again. I don't know that I need any, I don't think I need any of it replayed. I think this is when I might like, I might fast forward this scene on a rewatch, Shannon.
It's extremely cringe, but like, Lindsay, I don't know where you sit on the whole Charles apologizing to Grace and I have, but how could you not have the most extreme sympathy for Charles through this episode? I mean, that's my ultimate take. And I like that the show actually portrayed that, like that Anne gives voice to that, because like a crime is committed against them. It's such a horrible thing that they have this intimate conversation, which is, it's a strange conversation for sure. But at the end of the day, like if you actually look at the conversation, it's clear like how comfortable they are with each other. Mm-hmm. They clearly love each other so much. It starts with him asking her opinion on the speech. Like he sees her as very much like an intellectual equal. He has so much respect for her. Like the great love of Charles and Camilla, I think, really comes through in this episode, let alone the fact that they like help each other through this trauma that they're experiencing, this public trauma. Like when they put their arms around each other when they're walking, I was like, this is a very sweet thing. Like the fact that they find their way to each other after everything is something that I'll kind of always back, and especially through themes this episode. So yeah, I mean, I think that what happened to them might face more backlash today, in that like a private conversation is intercepted, leaked. It's a crime. And I think that when we see like flashes to Andrew, pointed flashes in the boardroom, it reminds you like how much worse it could be than two consenting adults who, yes, are committing adultery, but like two consenting adults having a private conversation on the phone. And I just felt terrible for Charles and Camilla through this whole episode.
Yeah, I thought this was so well done too, where I agree. I think they've done a really good job of conveying that like this is a love story of people who have been in love for like 60 years. Yeah. And in particular, I think it's funny how they're like this was such an embarrassing moment in the 90s, and like with good reason. But I do agree, Shannon, I think that if this happened now, people would be pretty upset about this, especially given, I mean, they frame it here as, oh, this was just an amateur radio guy who stumbled on the phone call by accident. I do find that very hard to believe, given how much we know about phone tapping, especially in the UK. Like, this has happened repeatedly. Like, we know this does happen. And also just, I mean, really, if anyone's phone calls where they're having like sexy talk with their partner, it's going to be embarrassing no matter who you are. And yes. So, and Charles even, you know, taps on it where he's like, the hypocrisy of this, like no one would sound any better. Obviously what he said is super embarrassing, but like everyone would have an embarrassing conversation. No one would want this to happen to them. And I also agree, Shannon, I had it flagged as well when they put their arms around each other. Like that's a really beautiful moment of just supporting each other. And I think it's really wonderful that it's like, yeah. And he called her to ask about a speech, not to be like, hey, you up? Like he's calling for this conversation with his partner. And just the fact that they're not, you know, formally together does not change the fact that at this point they've been in a relationship for a very long time. And this is a true partnership.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point about like if this tape is released now, and it doesn't matter who it is, but also there's so much more to the tape. Like people, you know, dissect and take the part that's like, look at the naughty stuff that they're saying to each other. Yeah. When like there's this whole exchange of them like not wanting to hang up on each other, right? Like it's like totally like school, you know, high school, like, you know, talking to your crush on the phone, be like, no, you hang up, no, you hang up, you know, and they just keep saying it, not wanting to hang up. That's like very sweet. And there's so much more to the tape than just like, yeah, they're a bit like, you know, flirting, more than flirting. But yeah, these are people who are soulmates, I think.
Yeah, I think that The Crown backs up the belief I've always had, which is that like Charles and Camilla's love was a love worth fighting for. Unfortunately, it also became a love that they hurt a lot of people for. But I think when you see something like this, they stick by each other through a lot. This is just like probably the tip of the iceberg. We've seen it, you know, of what they've had to go through to end up together. And it is, as tragic as it is on the rest of the side, there are huge parts of this relationship that are a great love story. It has to be, because there's so much in their relationship that would break most other couples. Like it is a soulmate level relationship. And I think we see that. And I think when we see the intrusion of this being leaked, it's an ongoing theme. I mean, obviously Diana's going to die for the fact that people are trying to intrude on her. Even last episode, when we're kind of joking about, you know, Andrew's talking about the photos of Sarah, it's a crime. I think that like society has evolved to the point where we're aware now, like obviously Megan's been through it. Like we're not entitled to these extremely intimate moments from public figures. And it feels like it should kind of be in the public domain because they're important to the world, but it's not. It's actually like an intrusion on these individual people. So I think, yes, we've come a long way as a society. And I think that that viewpoint was given in the episode, and it also sheds light on other things like we saw from last episode, as we're going to see with Diana, on like how wrong this is and how they are victims of these crimes.
Yeah, I hope that Diana, like, not being in this episode, I mean, she is, because like they do show her, like, her reacting to the phone conversation. I feel like so much of, like, my, you know, memory and thinking of it, like, Diana is such a, like, beloved figure that it's really easy to then just, like, paint Charles as the bad, you know, idiot. So I also want to,
in many ways, he is
bad. There are things that he did that are not good, that are bad. But it's the easiest narrative for, like, media to tell, which is like young lovely princess who, you know, and then evil prince, right, is like the story that they wanted to tell, who's like cheating. So like I feel like to a degree, like I never really knew that, like, Diana had cheated mm-hmm. you know, in the relationship as well. And I'm not, like, I don't think that that's, you know, a bad thing that she did that per se. I'm not, like, casting any blame or doubt or whatever on Diana, you know, finding her own way to, like, be loved, you know, while she's in this, like, loveless marriage. But she did that as, you know, yeah, I'm, like, really trying to, like, it's going to make this sound like I'm, like, they're both equally bad. It's like, I'm not saying that. I'm not just, like, yeah, this is the, I think that they're, yeah, it's, like, this is, like, a tragedy that, like, Charles and Camilla have this, like, you know, love story that is, like, they can't, and then it gets, like, exposed. And the whole thing being, like, tampon gate is so, it's mm-hmm. you know, it's, like, you know, that, like, that's the thing that's, like, the headline that they pull of, like, yeah, yeah. It's, but at the same time, she's like, love it. It's easier to love you than, like, to fall off a chair. It's like, oh, that's kind of cute. Yeah.
No, I mean, like, even the tampon thing, like, he was being self-deprecating.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Like, it was kind of funny.
He says, God forbid, like, I'd be a tampon, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, that would be me. Classic me, like the yeah. Tampax of the royal family. Like, it's super cringe, but, like, he's, you know, he's making a joke at his own expense. Like, I think that's funny. I mean, I think with Diana, she did cheat, but the way that we get the narrative and what seems to be true was, like, she was at that point just, like, completely pushed out of the relationship.
For sure.
And there was nothing there. And, like, it was very much a reaction. Like, I've always seen it as, obviously, their, like, co-victim status from the crown and the system. And that's always been my, you know, my sympathy for Charles more than, like, well, Diana was also bad to him. Like, that seems like that wasn't the case.
Yeah, no, I don't. Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, like she is, like, forced into positions, and as we've seen in season 4, like, seems to, like, keep trying. So I feel like, yeah, there's, like, the hurt of the crown to both of them, and then, like, Charles pushes that more onto her. But we've always seen him as a victim of the system, and, like, it's really tragic from, like, a Camilla perspective.
Mm-hmm. I do think there's a part of the, like, why he was such a laughing stock of this too, where it's like, and he acknowledged periods are a thing.
Yeah, true.
That's, yeah, hilarious. As a man as well. Like, yeah, in the 90s especially, like, let's not even talk about it. Super cringe. It is, but, like,
yeah, so I think that just, like, buries it a little bit of the fact that, like, listening back, I was like, this is funny of him being like, just, like, swirling around and can't be flushed down or whatever. Yeah. It's like, that's funny.
It's not that long that I feel, it has been, like, you know, people, like, we could just say tampons are a thing that exists, you know, and then embarrassing, you know. I do love everybody, like, in the, like, the way that, again, sometimes the show just gets, like, Peter Morgan gets stuff just, like, handed to him of, like, here, you get to do this, which is film the scenes of everybody reacting to the newspaper article of the sex tape, including his own dad. We get both an Anne and Margaret, like, reaction of just, like, oh interesting. this is a really good Anne episode. We've really haven't seen much from Anne. She's in episode 1 where she's like, ooh, who's that down there? And then turns out she's gonna marry that guy. And we got the scene last episode with Margaret. But what'd you think of Anne's was one of my favorites in season 3 and season 4. That was, like, you know, even better on a rewatch. So what do you make of this Anne, Shannon?
I love her relationship with Charles. I love that it was spotlighted here because we saw it more, obviously, with the old cast. Even though, like, she's very much always been, like, his person and confidant, but he would like someone who was a little softer, I think. Like, his 100%. Person is still very harsh, and he's, like, said that at times as well. Like, he'd love a little bit more kind of that softer love because he has very little else. I thought this was a really interesting episode because he and Anne should be really united on their ideals. Like, he even says, like, it cuts to her when he says, like, you know, he's, like, fighting basically for women in the crown, and that, like, the daughters aren't ruled out of being like first in line, which is something I think they've since changed. And she is like kind of beautifully angry on his behalf. Like she, you can see like clearly indignant for him. She supports him through that. She kind of also jokes about it, but is like, it's so hypocritical. And that's a great thing. I was just a bit surprised about some of the lack of loyalty that she would go back to her parents and give that information on Charles, even though she is kind of supporting him, even though she's being positive about him and saying like he's doing something kind of cool. It's a little bit of a lapse in trust. I would think that he wouldn't expect her to go back with that. And I kind of wish that she had been just like a clearer ally to him, especially because, I mean, it feels like they should be aligned. It seems a little hypocritical that she would say to him, like, we close rank behind the sovereign. I'm like, but didn't you defy her last episode? Like, aren't we aligned on the fact that, like, this is outdated, that we're done being put in these positions, and we're together on that? So then she, like, takes it back, and it seems that she seems really angry at the betrayal, that he's, like, really making a power struggle with the queen. And that probably is a bridge too far, and that's probably the one thing I disagree with Charles in this episode, is, like, really coming against her in this, like, kind of power war. But I still think she took it a little far to go back to them with that information.
Yeah, Lindsay, I think it's interesting. Like to defend Anne a little bit, I feel like Anne, her like thing here is we'll fix it from the inside a little bit, which is like very naive of anybody in the royal family to be like, if we just talk about it, that'll solve it. Because she's kind of like coming back and being like, hey, he's actually like, I think he's actually gonna make like a really good king. It's like essentially what she's saying to like the rest of them. They're all like, I don't know about that, which is like just enlightening in itself that they're all like, I don't know if Charles is gonna make a good king, but like, what are you gonna do about it? Like, oops, guess we can't talk to him or like fix it or like show him love. I guess that's it, huh? So I don't, yeah, and Anne is divorced and getting married. Like she, to the point of like last episode where Margaret's like, why is it? How is it different? Like, I don't know. It is different. Now, Anne has like got to, she has divorced, has almost said got to. That's not the right thing that she's like was given person. She divorces her husband, and now she's going to marry this man that she's in love with. And so, you know, I think it's like a little bit maybe hypocritical for like to think that like, it, you know, okay, let's like it's her, the Charles situation isn't the same because he is like the heir and she is not. But I think she thinks that it, like she's kind of in, if that, in a way that Charles is more out than Anne is, specifically. So when she comes back, I feel like she does think she's like speaking on behalf, but I can see how you're like, you can just cut that to yourself. You can just let him do it. Just let him go do it over there. Let somebody else. Somebody else will spill the beans. What'd you think of this episode for Anne, Lindsay?
Yeah, I agree that I think it is slightly complicated, or it definitely was a really strong episode for her. I love her coming in and like repeatedly throughout the episode, she's like, I brought you cold medicine. It's full of chemicals. Like she's just she's very funny and charming through the whole thing. At the end, I did think it was interesting how she's like, we close ranks behind the sovereign, and is clearly drawing that line in the sand. And it also just is sort of a funny framing to me too, how she's praising him, but very much like, you know how we always talk about how he's clearly not ready for this and he's super weak and terrible? Like, he's actually not as much of those things as we thought.
Yeah, for real. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. It doesn't totally surprise me that she came back being like, I'm going to sort of tattle on what's going on here. But also, yeah, I agree, Shannon. I think it would have been nice to see he actually has someone that he can turn to and trust in those moments.
I guess that person is Camilla the most, you know, like, and I do love his relationship with Anne. I don't really want to put that down, but Camilla is the person who will stand by him no matter what, clearly, and who is like so mad on his behalf in terms of like what happened with Philip. And they like just, it shows how imperative that support system was, because he doesn't have like another perfect person. Like, he's kind of, as they might say, a little bit too weak for the kind of love that Anne would deliver. So it really does fall on like Camilla to be that perfect support. But it is funny, yeah, how they look at him as this like crazy madman, when like, let's be honest, in terms of being a Charles apologist again, and this is really the episode for it, not a lot to disagree on with what Charles is doing. It's kind of upsetting that it's seen as so radical and political that he's basically like, let's help the less fortunate. And they're like, don't be such, like, don't like cause so much chaos. He's like, let's use our like enormous privilege and wealth to like help things like the environment, like ridiculously before his time on some of these things. Mm-hmm. Help disadvantaged youth, help, you know, gender equality. And like, he's totally right that the crown even trying to push these things is like laughably outdated. He's trying to make like real change. He's actually wrong in terms of the crown. Like, I think a lot about what Elizabeth is saying later about the crown is actually correct in terms of the crown. But as we've said, like, the crown is a super flawed system. So he's right objectively, like in life. And it's seen as this like really audacious thing where I don't think you'd find a lot of like modern viewers who would disagree that like, yeah, if the crown were really using their power to help people, that would have been like a better use for that. And that might also help like that a lot of the complaints, even politically in the season have been, oh, they just take taxpayers' money. And like, it's all been so, you know, compared to like Elizabeth and Philip, who are like, give me money for my castle, give me money for my yacht. And he's like, let's use money to help people, and then puts his money where his mouth is. And as we've seen, it has actually helped lots and lots of people through the prince's trust. It's really hard to disagree in the debate of like progression and them being so stagnant. You're on his side about like how helpful the crown can be.
Yeah, I mean, stagnant, Lindsay, you know, the queen will say like Charles wants to be more animated, even though the crown is inanimate. We're just a symbol, which, gosh, feels like Shannon, if you're watching the show, of like maybe she'll soften. Elizabeth and Philip have not a great episode this episode. We're talking about like their edit. This was
she does consider it. More than Philip does, at least. Philip really takes the brunt of kind of my anger towards them as a couple right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But how are you finding, like, yeah, because there's this, like, it's been a theme of the season. It's in episode one about being, you know, he's like, I'll be a fresh modern take. Like, if Queen Victoria had have, like, abdicated for he could have been, like, on the throne for much longer than he ended up being, and he ushered in, like, change. Like, how are you finding this battle between, like, Elizabeth and Charles?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because compared to in season four, I think they spent more time highlighting how he was feeling very like overshadowed by Diana, where everyone was like, she's the one who's charismatic, she's the one who's fun, she's the one who's in touch with the people, and you're so out of touch and stuffy and all this stuff. Versus this one it's an interesting pivot in this episode, especially where they're juxtaposing him against the queen, being like, sure, maybe he's not as fun and charismatic as Diana, but he's still an improvement potentially on the policies and the opinions of Elizabeth currently. Like, for example, Gracie alluded to the moment where they're saying like he wants to be animate when the crown is inanimate, and they're like, well, you know, people are really responding to him saying maybe we should bring in people from other religions, and she's like, what? Like, that's not our job. This is outrageous. So yeah, I don't know, I think it's been an interesting way of reframing Charles, where I do think he's definitely more sympathetic than he was last season. Definitely, again, I see the line that you're both having to walk of being like, yes, they've done bad things, they've done so many very bad things, but also they are doing a good job of making him much more sympathetic in this episode in particular.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to the interview response he has about like, why are we just the defender of like Christian faith? Like, what about Jews and Sikhs and, you know, all of these other religious groups on like on TV? It's like, yeah, I wish we actually got the shot of, I think we get a Diana watching it. Do we get Philip watching it? Oh no. After like literally two episodes ago, she's like, you know, I don't think I'm going to go sit with that Egyptian guy. I think I'm okay. I think I'm fine. Yeah, the fact that Charles like says it in this like TV interview documentary, like in the early 90s, feels pretty wild. I don't know that as king he's really like been trying to pull in all the other
thinking. I was like, wow, but is this happening? Like, Charles is king right now, like what? But here's the thing that's so hard, and like maybe it is being naive because he's not the sovereign. I mean, once upon a time Elizabeth also, I mean, she's always been like a more muted person, and she's like more happy to go along with things, but she also had hopes of like, no, it's fine. Like, again, like I'll let Margaret marry Peter Townsend. And she had like a rude awakening of like how kind of harsh the system was. Like, I think when Charles became king, it was probably like all those ideals you had, like, yeah, you can't just not have, it's not like the sovereign's choice of whether you're going to do this. It's not like you're a politician who decides which way you're going to go. Like, the system molds you. You don't mold the system. So it's a little bit kind of naive, I think, for him to be like, I would do this if I were king. Like, no, you wouldn't, you know, like you think that just because you're not the sovereign and you don't understand just like how stifling that title would be. So it's easy to be like free and bold now. Again, I don't think these things should be so bold, but free and bold when you're not in the position where it's going to get stamped out of you like it would be to probably any monarch. But I think that's what's so hard about this, is that like, I really do think the queen is technically correct in like her interpretation of the crown. Like, that's what we've always known of it. It's kind of like, for me, as like an Orthodox Jew, I could say, I wish like Orthodox Judaism could become more progressive, and we could like, in, you know, put these, like have better like gender equality as an example. And I would actually technically be wrong. That is not the point of like these old school institutions that in like a matter of like tradition want to stay at what they've been. It might be technically right of what we know of society now. It might even be morally right, but it's not right in and of itself within that system. So like, I agree with Elizabeth when she says that's not what The Crown is in terms of bringing in other faiths. Obviously, that's an ideal to strive for, but that's not what The Crown's going to do. So she like makes it make sense for herself, which is like that as a symbol, we unite everyone, not even, you know, even though unfortunately a lot of people get left out of that unity. So it's a hard one. I think it's a very interesting overarching theme, which we're currently getting for the season, which is about this kind of power struggle and this like tug of war between how far you can progress with something like this. Because I think what we'll find is like, you can't really progress with it.
Yeah. Cause I think, you know, I don't know how interested the show is in like exploring again, whether like the monarchy should exist or not. But what Elizabeth says about Charles wanting to be more animate is just, there's a risk in doing that. You can end up undoing more than doing, which, you know, as they're like, you know, the monarchy as it is, even in the 90s, they are like beholden to government and like, you know, in many ways, right? Like they have to get like spending, even, you know, the whole Margaret thing, as we talked about last episode, is the reason why like Elizabeth like kind of leads Margaret on is because like government officials lead her on, right? It's like, well, she has to wait till she's of age. And then when she's of age, like, well, actually she still has to ask permission and we're going to say no. So you have to go back and say no, she can't marry, right? Without like pushing it, right? Like the risk is like, you have to push government and public and then affect public perception. That's all what episode one is about as well. Of he's like, yeah, we're in a recession. Like, how is it going to look that we have a monarchy who needs their yacht fixed when we're in a recession and people are like unemployed, right? And so, yeah, I think you're right that like by being, you know, attached to this like the system of what does she say, like with as many functions that are inanimate, right? Like or something mm-hmm. like that. Many of the functions of an inanimate object. That's right. That if you start to change, and that it can change. It's like, well, if you can change on that thing, how can you can't change on the rest of these things? You know, it's like, yeah, if you can change on gender, how, you know, can you change on sexuality? Can you change on, you know, this, you know, all of these other things that start to like force it, which like, yeah, is inherently a good thing. But if you are a beneficiary, which she says last episode, she benefits the most from the system of getting to live, your family gets to live in a castle just because of who you were born, then like, yeah, don't you want to, do you want to keep that? It sounds like you want to keep that. You don't want to change much, I don't think, Lindsay.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the whole basis of all of the anti-racism stuff that we're all hopefully working on improving, of like, when you are benefiting from white supremacy, you are not super incentivized to change the structures that are helping you. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing here, right? She's so privileged by the system and her whole family is so privileged by the system. So that's why I think, back to your point, Grace, about like, oh, I'll change it from the inside. It's like, okay, well, but like, it's really benefiting you from being on the inside. Like, how much are you really going to do? You might have to give up your castle.
I also think it's a scandal of it all. I mean, they've been like such a scandalous family recently with all the divorces and everything. And now it's like even being progressive enough to say what I think most people in the 90s would agree with, you know, like let's like have like outdated gender rules go away. Like let's help people with our enormous wealth. Like people would probably agree with that. And even that, it's like that would be such a scandal. And there probably are like extremely conservative royalists who would say like how dare, you know, they change the institution and would be scandalized by that. But I guess if you're going to talk to that group and really like try to appeal to that group, it's something that we at least wouldn't agree with. So but it would be hard, because I think as well, as we see, they are beholden to these other institutions, as you're saying, these government institutions and the church. I think that's like been a really big part, and that's why it's so interesting that he brings up faith. Like we talked, Grace, last episode about how the queen kind of seeks out religious counsel instead of like the therapy that she so desperately needs. But it's not even just the fact that she's like going to a religious leader, it's the fact that the religious leader, like she again is like head of the church and also like head of state, and there's like the fact that the church is so like invested in this royal institution, and then that has political ties, and that ties it all together. So it becomes scandalous when he says let's include other religions, because it's this kind of political thing as well, even though, again, it should just be pure and right. So he said a lot of interesting things. I'm interested to get your take on the documentary, because, again, that's, I think, meant to be, like, the crescendo of the episode. And I know it got, like, a big stir in actual society at the time, that he, like, in a similar way to Elizabeth's last episode, is like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to, like, reclaim my narrative, and I'm going to be super transparent. And I'm, like, less, like, apologetic maybe than Elizabeth. Like, I don't think he's like, sorry, Diana, that wasn't cool. It's more like, let me offer this explanation. But he does say, like, the royal family is fallible. As an heir to the throne who's meant to be godlike, and as the Queen Mother would say, like, you're not meant to show that you're not these like perfect ideals. So do you think that that hit, like, in seeing like him make those comments and that being like as scandalous as it was that like a good enough crescendo for the episode for you?
I think the document, you know, again, this is like part of the thing of the show where oftentimes they like, I feel like they want to make sure that they hit like the moments that happened in real life. And so they tie the documentary in. I think it makes sense to have it like a few. I do think the timing of the season is has been a little bit funky, but that's fine. Again, like two of us have only watched half of this. So whether it like sort of like works together in unison, we'll see. But I think like the documentary is, you know, this example of like that, like Charles is a very complicated figure that he was stuck in. So he admits to adultery, right? He admits that he cheated in the documentary. I think,
shocking
for the first
news.
Time.
No one shocking would have news. Got that from the extremely cringe league tape. They were just friends. Yeah, that was a friendly conversation that all of us have with our friends.
That's right. So I think it works because it's like, it's him. And also the idea of like him, I know this like becomes a thing, but he's trying to do something that like feels modern, right? And he's trying to let people in. Like part of the thing is that similar to Diana, who feel like she feels like an outsider, that like, you know, people don't love her. I think he feels very similarly, that like if you look at the end of the episode, it's like Anne sitting with everybody else in their family. I guess like not Andrew and Edward, but it's the Queen Mother, it's Margaret, Philip, and Elizabeth, and like Charles is not welcome to come have like, you know, after dinner tea or whatever. Like he is an outsider, and so he like, if he can't get the validation from his family, then he wants it from the general public, right? Which I don't know, like in the history of like, you know, where we are now, it like it worked necessarily. Like there's a lot of like, yeah, I think when Elizabeth dies, I don't know that like some people are going to stick around the Commonwealth for King Charles, but I think the documentary a thing works here in terms of like him thinking it'll be something that will like be able to break through and people will be able to get to know him. Yeah, what do you think, Lindsay?
Yeah, I think a couple things about that. So one, I completely agree of like, I had this a bit conflated in my head where I couldn't remember if the revenge dress thing was tied to the tapes or to the interview. And I was like, I know it's one of them. It's like when she finds out, when he officially confirms that he's been having an affair. And I guess in my mind, I was like, I mean, it feels like pretty official confirmation to have your transcripts leaked where you're talking about having sex with someone else. But it was definitely after the interview part. So yeah, I don't really get why that was considered so shocking, given that they had just found out for sure. Mm. But the other thing I think is interesting, and it's touched on very lightly, is he talks to Anne and says, I'm going to publish this book about like climate and architecture and education and all the things I think are important.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that book, by all accounts, is like impossibly boring.
Oh, really?
Like a very dull read that people
can't. You want to read it, Shannon?
It
we'll do a book club episode.
Fascinating. Book club. Yeah. Charles's thoughts on.
And I think like inevitable, I think there's like inevitable comparisons to be made, right? Where the Diana tapes are still massively published and read and people are still, you know, reading that book. And it's kind of the same idea where Charles in the last season was like, she doesn't care about architecture or like plays and stuff. And so these are the things that are so important to him. And he's like, I need to publish a book. That was what people were super interested in, I am sure. Mm-hmm. We got really distracted by all this adultery stuff. It's like, no, that's what people were interested in for sure.
Yeah, how dare Charles, they? How Charles could they care about all this interesting adultery stuff when they keep talking about architecture? Yeah. Yeah.
Charles and Anne can't even really agree on like how much people are interested in, because she's like, I think they're less interested than you think. And he's like, yeah, but more than you think, which like, is like, this could be any number of people. I think also I feel like we're not giving Charles enough credit. He does at the end of this episode, actually, he does solve racism through breakdancing, and I feel
he actually breakdanced
in 1985.
I saw the clip, I watched
he was doing breakdancing, and that was the end of racism in England, so it's pretty cool that he did that.
He honestly, I feel like the breakdancing was more embarrassing than the tape.
I mean, absolutely agree.
Yeah, he did that like knowingly in public, and that's obviously worse. I mean, look, he's the only member of the royal family who's breakdancing. Give me another who okay, other than Charles, who is in his own way like so cringe, who do we think is most likely from the royal family to breakdance? Margaret?
Probably. That's a good
pick, who's in the show right now?
Yeah.
Margaret. Definitely Andrew. Like absolutely Andrew, right?
In his own cringe way.
Yeah. He's gonna break dance. Yeah,
I think it was so interesting as well in terms of the documentary, in that like, so he comes and he says that, you know, the royal family aren't perfect, but I kind of feel like he was just saying, like, did he really believe that? Like, I think he was saying, stop judging me to these like impossible standards, I'm so tired. Whereas like, I think in comparison to like the Queen giving a kind of similar or like a similarly toned speech last time, where she was like, sorry, we're not perfect, I feel like she actually embraced that more again. Like, she seemed like actively apologetic to Margaret. She was seeing like her actual fault, where I feel that like Charles isn't really sorry, I don't think, for what he's done to Diana. He's not going to like be like, wow, I've really made mistakes, and treat her better. I think he just wants to come out and be transparent and ask for a little bit more sympathy, even maybe more than forgiveness, like just a little bit more grace, without like really seeing like, yeah, not disgrace, but in terms of like grace.
Tilted my head sufficiently enough for Shannon to catch it. Yeah.
Rather than seeing like his part to play necessarily in like what he's done wrong. Cause it could have been a very different speech if he came out in the documentary and was like, I've, you know, really done the wrong thing. He's like, yeah, the marriage broke down and we tried and like this inevitably happened, but there wasn't like, but I still shouldn't have, and I am very apologetic, and like Diana didn't deserve it, because that's not what he believes, you know, like he's not at that point of humility yet that like even to the Queen got to last episode.
Yeah, I mean, so a couple of things. Like, first of all, you don't like, you aren't like the like God's again, I think I said this before, you're not like God's chosen like a representative on earth without feeling like you get a little bit of an ego and like feel like you might need to protect your image a little bit. And so I do feel like, and then my other point was going to be that it takes Elizabeth basically like until 1992 to be like, hey, I'm sorry that this has actually affected everybody else as well. Like, publicly very sorry about that. And so I can't exactly have Charles like, because I think rightfully so, like he's very mad at his parents, I think, more than anybody. And then he's taking out all of that anger on, he takes a lot of it out on Diana as well, of like, if you would just be fine and just like adore me and love me and just like be by myself and do whatever I want, then like,
and abdicate, really, or die, either way.
Yeah, and then his mom, just abdicate.
Yeah.
Or die, you know, but he's not willing to then be like to actually own up to anything that he's done wrong yet, because also he's like, he sees that he like, you know, he thinks that at any moment he can become king, and he can't like be, you know, he has to like, he's kind of, I feel like he sees himself as like, I don't think he sees himself as perfect, but I definitely don't think he sees it like, I think he feels like he's a victim a lot, which like is fair. There are ways in which he is a victim, absolutely, or other ways where he's like not the victim, you know. So yes, he's a very complicated individual figure.
Yeah, I think he's definitely like, I was married to a very hysterical woman, and you have no idea what that was like for me, and she was so mopey all the time.
She's
like, yeah, she loved shopping so much.
Yeah. So I mentioned Philip a little bit before. I do. It's pretty wild that Philip essentially says to his son, like, "What's the motto of the Welsh?" Is like, "Death before decide." Like, he goes to say, actually, I will say, he does speak Welsh in this episode,
not in English.
And he's like, "Come on, in English." And he says it, and he's like, "Yeah, death before dishonor. You should have died before you."
Why wouldn't you die in this family?
They all just are like, it'd be much easier if all of you were dead. I think all of them think that about each other.
Yeah. Much less complicated.
Yeah.
I mean the Philip Charles dynamic was probably my favorite dynamic to come out of this episode, because let's be honest, they're very similar people, more similar than either one of them would like to admit. It's the fact that Charles is like, oh, his sycophants were, you know, all nodding, but like at the very beginning you see that Charles sort of has his group of like groupies who are obsessed with him and who just tell him what he wants to hear. It's the fact that the whole first two seasons is Philip trying to make the monarchy more progressive, and fighting with Elizabeth about it and really pushing that at the time, which might have seemed radical at the time. And he's still trying to do that. It's just that like his feelings of progressiveness are now like extremely outdated, but he was doing that too. He was also fighting for being progressive way back when. There's so many things that make them extremely similar. The fact that Philip tried to make a documentary to reclaim the narrative of the royal family, and then Charles does the exact same thing. Like, they're, yeah, again, more similar than they'd like to admit, but then Philip doesn't come off well in this episode, again, like in how outdated he is by being so mad at his son, who's basically had a crime committed against him, and there's no sympathy there at all. It's literally like, I would have preferred your death over this in so many words. So I thought that this was a very interesting dynamic. I also think it's like Philip coming to Elizabeth's aid, because Elizabeth as we said, had a more muted reaction. Like she gives her opinion to the Prime Minister at the end of the episode, but she is like, maybe he's right. You know, we've seen how insecure she is about being too old school and like so past her time, and people are saying that may be true. So she's considering it, and she never lashes out back at Charles. So Philip is put in the mold of, I think, like defending, as he has been for the last few seasons, defending the institution, the crown, and Elizabeth, like, and the sovereign, in this way that she doesn't feel as strongly about or is more doubtful about in and of herself. So he comes out harsh, and that's the way he always treats Charles. But I think that we're meant to see him, I think, as very wrong in this, and like the sympathy goes to Charles again.
We've really put the pause also on anything to do with Philip and Lady Ramsay. I really thought that was going to be like a whole thing. It's really not. I mean, I guess it's the second episode kind of back into like the crown stuff.
But like, also, don't you like, that's another similarity I feel with Philip, like death before dishonor. Like, yeah, Philip's never done anything that could have possibly been leaked and dishonored the crown. Like, there are tapes somewhere that someone didn't find.
There's a back of his head. Back of his head in a newspaper.
Literally, that's what I'm like, it's not even the stuff that we didn't find out about. It's about the humiliations that actually also happened. Like, there is amnesia for the first few seasons from all the Philip sins. Like, and he does try to gloss over it. There are very funny moments where Elizabeth will kind of make a joke about it. He's like, oh, what nonsense you talk about. And he like wants to forget that part of himself, as if, again, he wasn't the progressive cheater who Charles, of all people, should be able to turn to Philip and be like, Dad, what's it like to humiliate the crown? What's it like to be caught in these tricky situations? What's it like to have rumors about you? What's it like to be fighting for a monarchy when no one understands you and like fighting for that being progressive? Like, they're the same. And Philip has just never extended that hand. And both of them would cry out that they are not similar, but there are just so many dissimilarities between them.
Do you know what's really interesting, though? That Philip had a charity that's like devoted to youth as well. The Duke of Edinburgh. International.
A lot of people at my school did the Duke of Edinburgh.
Yeah, okay, because we're all from the Commonwealth.
I know. That's how I found out what the Duke of Edinburgh was before I even knew about Prince Philip.
I know. This is so silly, but like, there's so many things in Canada where like, my office, like a few years ago, it's like Princess Margaret, and it's like, oh yeah, that's like Princess Margaret. It's like Princess Margaret Foundation. Yeah, that makes sense. There's a lot of like hospital stuff that are like Princess Anne. Like, there's a lot of stuff around it that's like, all just like named after
Prince of Wales roads.
Yeah, Prince of Wales. Yeah. The Duke of Edinburgh
Hospital. Yeah.
Although, I will say, the Duke of Edinburgh Award does seem like, I feel like my of it is just like, go and do things. Go and do things, which I think is like different than
it's like go and do outdoor
activities and like push yourself personally, which is like, I think, different than like Charles being like, you maybe help like underprivileged kids. Like, I feel like some of my experience with the Duke of Edinburgh where I was like very privileged kids like doing things 100%. That they were gonna do. Yeah, that's
like I remember seeing
that's a good metaphor. Like, they both are trying to help kids. Mm-hmm. They're trying to help in their own way. That's quite progressive. But like, Philip's version of being progressive is like helping very privileged kids.
Like, if you just pull up your bootstraps, like, you'll be fine. Yeah. And realizing that like, pull up your bootstraps is a paradox that you can't actually do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all just about like getting a hobby just for all of these young people, right?
Like, which is like, there is a lot of stuff about him trying to be progressive, but a lot of the problems that he has is he's just like, I'm bored. And he's like, I'm like, fly a plane, please. Anything else from the episode? Did we miss anything? What did we not chat about yet?
The only line I have highlighted that we didn't touch on is Anne saying that the conversation was too gynecological for her.
Yes,
taste.
That's right.
Anne is great.
Very funny.
A very strong episode, I thought. I really liked it. I think the last episode is stronger. I think I really liked the first episode as well. Mm. But yeah, where are we ranking them as we're going? Interesting. Lindsay,
I haven't been ranking them, but I could start ranking them.
Yeah, well, where do you put this like so far?
I think I enjoyed episode 4 a lot more. Episode 4 is my favorite of the season, and I think that it's some of that structural stuff. Like, I feel like episode 4 had all of these things that happened, these like weirdly aligned things again, like Queen's life and castle are on fire. Let's kind of put that into these interesting structures. I think they had interesting callbacks, and I think that was just packaged a little better. Whereas I felt like this episode was a little bit more led by the story. Like, all these major things do happen, and it just kind of tells that story rather than like, I feel like making it a more packaged narrative for the episode, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like last episode was leading the story, and in this episode, the story was leading the episode, if that makes more sense. But they need to do it. I mean, we've taken some time off. We've had, like, these singular focuses, and there's a lot of ground to cover. And this episode, like, it really traverses a lot of that ground. So I think that it was more, to me, a means to an end. Like, there was very interesting stuff. I'm glad we got so much of Charles as well and had that focus on what's going to be such an important character. But I think for me, it was the simmer. And this is going to explode. Diana's going to come back. And, like, this is the things that we see moving to that point, but we haven't gotten quite to the destination yet. So I see it as a bit of like a transit episode, if that makes sense, to kind of get us where we need to be probably in the next couple of episodes.
I think I liked episode one the most just because it's the most about as many different people as possible. And it's very Elizabeth focused, which I think I also like a lot. I think I really like actually the Diana half of episode two, like her recording the tapes and the confession. I really like that stuff. I don't love the Philip is going to be a carriage driver with Lady Rossi as much as like Diana. So I think I like episode one the most because it's like the most about everybody in a way, and this I think is very strong because it's a Philip Charles episode as well, and we haven't really seen him much this season. Lindsay, I mean, you've watched it all. Has your favorite have we covered your favorite episode yet?
Oh man, okay, let me look real quick and see.
Yeah, don't spoil, but I just say yes or no.
Don't spoil if Mohammed comes back. We have a bet riding on that, so that's
okay. And don't tell us if Diana dies. And I don't mean that. I meant that as like not in the season.
In the season.
Yeah, I was just trying to. Yeah.
Spoilers. Yeah. No. I think there are stronger episodes ahead, I do really like episode four. I think I agree with what you were saying too, Grace, about the Diana half of when she's recording the tapes in episode two. I thought that was all extremely strong to start off the season. So I think I agree. I really like when we're getting more characters involved and we're getting to see what everybody's up to and checking in with all these characters that we've become so familiar with. And Shannon, I think that's a great point of like letting the story drive the episode. I think those ones do tend to be a little bit weaker where it's like, oh, how are we going to work this like tampon story into the plot? Like that felt necessary. So it just feels a bit more forced maybe and not as good. So I definitely think maybe episode four is probably my favorite that you've covered so far.
There's definitely an air of like they got to the writer's room and were like, all right, it's historically time for Tampon Gate. Let's just get that over with. Like, let's see. And like, we have to use that as like a focus on Charles and Camilla. But like, do we really want to like make this more artful or do we just want to show them having the conversation and then you all have your own opinions on it? Like, no, I think that they're with other than the story being led or leading the episode, I think that it's Charles. Like, it's all around Charles's interactions with his relationship with Philip, his relationship with Anne, even his like power struggle with the queen, his relationship with Camilla and even Diana in the way that she's silent. Yeah. Like does Charles ever listen to Diana talk? Like maybe that's the central narrative part of this episode. Yeah. Like maybe that's what it is. It's like Charles reacting to how everyone reacts to him because he's the center of this episode. And that would make a lot of sense of why Diana is kind of silent because that's where she is in Charles's life right now. So I think that maybe it's unfair to say it's just story-based. I think it's also this kind of character focus on Charles being the anchor and we see how those other relationships kind of manifest from that.
They've done like, you know, even to take a Charles episode, like they take like him going and studying Welsh and like make a masterpiece of that whole thing, you know, in a way that like is such a like beautiful, even singular episode of TV. Like we haven't really talked like in our favorite stuff. Like I do really like Moo Moo. It's just like it's like such an outlier of the rest of the episodes that we've seen so far, but it's a really like incredible piece of television, you know. It's like a singular hour of TV. So I feel like they've done better even just specifically with Charles in terms of like, let's take a historical moment and how do we weave that into the story that we're telling, even sometimes to the expense. Like I was reading something about like the Annus Horribilis speech that like, yeah, there's nothing in there about like being like apologizing to her family. It's just like, oh, this is what a bad year for us, the monarchs. And so the show takes it as like, sorry, Margaret, like, oops, like, I'm really sorry for the way I know, but it does work. And I don't mind it. And this is like, again, none of us are like watching the show being like, well, that's history, you know, like
I am. But like, also, I love the callback to Welsh. Like, I wanted to say that too, as well. Like the fact that he and then Philip gets so angry at it. It's such a great encapsulation of Charles as an outsider. And like, there's again, like this big break where he was just like berated by the queen after he like did that speech, and it's like, this is how you will always be, like, external to us, and also lean into it. Like, why would Charles say that in Welsh? Is that what Philip was asking for? Like, clearly not, but it's like always going to be the divide between them.
What's the motto is, would be, presumably it would be in Welsh. So he's saying the motto.
Well, Philip doesn't speak Welsh, you know, like Philip wants you to say it in a language he understands. You're the person, the proponent of English earlier in this episode. That was kind of half of the problem.
I know.
Speak English, but and that's a funny thing as well.
None of them communicate well with each other.
Yeah, they communicate terribly for, you know, so much of a, you know, emphasis on language. But I think that is, they do that very well, not Welsh, but well in terms of like, where does Charles sit in being progressive when a lot of it is like, these damn kids don't know how to speak English anymore. Like, a lot of it is very old school and just like, you know, like, especially compared to Diana. But I think they've done a really good job of positioning like where he would sit in that, which is like, again, yeah, like pretty progressive, but like probably not progressive even enough as we would see it.
Also, Charles gives the insult of the episode in which he's talking about the way ahead grip, and he goes, more like the lagging behind grip. Oh, nailed it, Charles. He's great. What a great king we have that we all love. Yeah. God save
the
king.
United the faith.
Yeah. All right. I think that's our episode 5 coverage, the way ahead. Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us.
This was so wonderful. Thank you so much for letting me come on. I was delightful chatting with you both and so much fun talking about the show.
Lindsay, if people want to hear more from you, where can they find you and what are you up to?
Yes, they can hear more from me over on BoJack HorsePod, where we have finished BoJack Horseman and are now on to Tuca and Birdie, and also over on the podcast of tomorrow talking about Futurama.
Amazing. Shannon, what about you?
I'm at Shannon Gates, still on Twitter, TBD,
episode that comes out, we're like teetering, on the edge, yeah.
Yeah, still just covering Survivor. This week I'm on the feedback show with Rob.
Very fun.
So that's on the main feed for Survivor. And yeah, otherwise loving covering The Crown. So much fun to dive into like narrative choices and stuff. It's very fun. It's very different from an edit, as we said, even though they have Purple Dan at different times. But yeah, it's really fun to be like, why would Diana not speak? Why would Diana be so purple? This was like very purple on the suit for Diana, but she saw an impact. Sometimes they say it's not as much as what you say, but
the show is so good. This is 2 episodes in a row where we try to do plugs and we keep talking about the show. Because I agree. I love the more I like come Diana out of the episode. Yeah, it's always Diana stuff. I do love the choice to like kind of not have, like, I think it's very bold because it's like, she's kind of like, I feel like is a bit
they
of
hate
like,
her.
Yeah, but also like, I think people are like, you know, just I think it's like, oh, like, season 5, okay, like you really get into the Diana stuff. And there's a whole episode where like she's not really in it. I think that's like a bold choice from
the
director. Like, I wonder if Peter Morgan wrote it that way or the director, Mael Tuke, like whether he directed it that way. I think it's very interesting. Mm. So, yeah. Anyway, back to plugs.
Sorry. It's always
I don't apologize.
Plug. Every time it's just Survivor and this. That's it. Well, and then I also want to talk about Diana. So
that's fair. Yeah. This is your plugs. I'm covering 1899, another Netflix show with Ariel and Rich. Also, I actually think that might be my only scripted show other than The Crown. Oh, no, Pusher Cups Theater. Movies each week with Ariel. And then over on Robin's Podcast. Actually, we just released a few days ago a Roll Call Confessionals, which is sort of the edited version of the board game. So if you want to watch the full board game, you want to watch us roll every single dice, you can come and do that on the Twitch and YouTube channels. But a few weeks later, we're going to release these things called Roll Call Confessionals, where people have filmed confessionals and it's like edited together like an episode of TV. So it's very fun. The wonderful Phil T edited this one for us and put it together. Rob is hysterical, unsurprisingly. Hot take. Rob is very funny and good at doing confessionals for reality for a reality show. But you can check out that version of Clue. It was very, very good, and I think it's well worth checking out. So go check that out. And then we announced that we're going to play Spyfall on November 29th. So I'm very excited about that and the crew we have put together. I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace, as long as Twitter is still a thing. We'll be back in a few days' time to chat about episode 6. Until then, bye-bye.